Hello, this is Mark Peacock, and welcome to the Travel Commons Podcast. This is Travel Commons Podcast number 141, recorded Thursday, May 31st, 2018. This is the podcast giving the voice to the traveler. It's more about the journey than the destination. Two topics on this edition of the Travel Commons Podcast: when you think the TSA is bad, and expired money. Coming to you from the Travel Commons studios outside of Chicago, Illinois. Not much travel since the last episode, just driving up to Wisconsin, until last week when I did a five-day trip with a client to Pune, India. Left O'Hare Friday night, landed in Frankfurt late Saturday morning, then heard them announce a flight to Pune before my flight to Delhi. Arrived in Delhi at 1 a.m. Monday morning, overnighted at the airport Radisson Blue, not a bad hotel, and then caught an afternoon Jet Airways flight to Pune. Note to self, you don't always have to fly the client's itinerary. In spite of all those legs, those multiple points of potential failure, everything went relatively smoothly on the way out. Not so much on the way home. The itinerary was to take an Air India flight from Pune to Delhi at 7 p.m. Thursday night, then a United flight to Newark, getting back to O'Hare around 9:30 a.m. Friday morning. We passed on a 5:30 p.m. Jet Airways flight, fearing that the Pune rush hour traffic wouldn't let us get there in time. And that's where the itinerary fell apart. While waiting for the client team to check their luggage, I had decided to ignore Air India's 8-kilogram carry-on weight limit. I get an email from Air India with a 2-hour delay due to operational reasons, which usually means a broken plane. So great. What was a reasonable 2.5-3 hour layover was suddenly an unreasonable 30-minute dash off the plane through the standard Indian airport itinerary check, then passport control, full pat-down security, weave through the terminal and to the gate. And the inbound Air India flight hadn't left Delhi yet. This doesn't feel good. I call our Amex travel number. Any room on that Jet Airways flight? Because it hasn't left yet. Nope, sold out. I briefly think about the 3-hour drive to Mumbai, but decide to keep heading to Delhi. I bang flights Delhi O'Hare May 24th into Google. I filter the Google flights results for one way and shortest duration, and then call Amex back. When the agent stopped after listing the limited United Airlines options, I guess that's because it's less work for them to keep me on the same airline, I asked her to check on the non-United options that Google Flights had listed. There's the direct Air India flight to O'Hare getting in around 7 a.m. on Friday morning, or a Lufthansa connection back through Frankfurt arriving around 1 p.m. I have her book both, knowing that I can cancel one well within the 24-hour no-penalty window. I got to tell you, Pune Airport is a dump. I'm trying to think of a worse airport that I've been in, and I'm drawing a complete blank. Weak air conditioning, failing to fight the 95-degree day, 3 to 4 food stands against the wall, and no bar. With nothing better to do, I bang Air India O'Hare to Delhi business class review into Google. The results were not kind, but I still think, you know, how bad could it really be? I mean, this seems like a bad karma travel day. Skipping the Frankfurt connection, avoiding another point of failure seems to be a good idea. But then I finally get on the Air India plane to Delhi. It was another complete dump. It was a bad 2 hours. I couldn't do another 15 hours with them. I decided to risk the Frankfurt connection. At first, it went well. Breakfast, beer, and pretzel in the lounge. On-time boarding. But after boarding, we sat and sat. The captain came on. The good news, the luggage was finally loaded and the cargo doors buttoned up. The bad news, our pushback time was an hour from now. There was nothing I could do. I just pulled out my iPhone and buried myself in the zen of solitaire. As it turned out, we didn't take the full hour delay, and the pilot juiced the engine, so we arrived, I'd say, only about 15 minutes late. And after looking at some in-flight pictures that the folks that took the Air India direct flight, looking at pictures that they sent, I don't know, that 15-minute delay was just trampled by the arrival of sort of full-on schadenfreude. I felt bad for them. I had definitely made the right decision. So following up, the airline's smart bag ban has claimed a couple casualties this month. Blue Smart, which is the smart bag company that that I purchased from, they posted their blog obituary first. The banning of smart luggage with non-removable batteries put our company in an irreversibly difficult financial and business situation. I bet it did. Well, anyhow, they sold their IP, their intellectual property, to Travel Pro, one of the legacy suitcase brands that they used to dismiss. A few weeks later, Rodden posted a similar obit. We sincerely apologize to those who chose to travel with us. Our intent was to add ease and simplicity to your travel experience, and this unforeseen policy change has made this impossible. Both companies said they're no longer honoring warranties, though BlueSmart said they'll still provide some level of email support. And smartphone apps, if you want to use your grounded bag on, say, I don't know, a train or a bus, still work. The bag maker Away, though, is still in business, even developing a free kit that retrofits their first-generation smart bag with an ejectable battery, making them compliant with the airline rules. Good on them. It's been an interesting arc. Gary Lerner tweeted back a solid counter-argument on last episode's on my rant in last episode on Minneapolis St. Paul's Terminal 2. If you remember, I called it I added it to my ghetto terminal list, the terminals for non-hub airlines like O'Hare's Terminal 2 and Detroit's North Terminal. That was after waiting for a Southwest flight back to Chicago back in April. Gary has a different take, though. Gary writes, I respectfully disagree on MSP T2. Sir Dykes has some great taps and wine, as well as good small bites. Barrio is a nice little Mexican local restaurant. I can go from car to gate in 5 minutes. Now, Midway, on the other hand, well, Gary, I got to tell you, car to gate in 5 minutes, that's a selling point right there. That actually you won't pick up Ubering in and out of a place like I did. You know, that used to actually be Midway before they just blew it up in a huge in that huge expansion. And way back when, that was like San Jose Airport before they blew that one up in a huge expansion. You know, little parking lots right in front of the terminal. Park, boom, walk right in. I won't defend Midway now. It's a bit of a cluster, though. I am hoping that the pending reconstruction of the security concourse, you know, sort of unclusters at least part of the problem. Gary, thanks for giving us that sort of contra view to Minneapolis St. Paul Terminal 2. I'll give Barrio a try the next time I'm there. And, you know, since we're talking about ghetto terminals, when choosing among the client-selected itineraries for this India trip, a connection through Munich was one of the options, which longtime listeners know I immediately skipped. Skytrax again named Munich the top European airport. God only knows why, though. They certainly didn't ask me. Instead, I connected through Frankfurt, which, while not a wowsy airport, is efficient. It's not a hassle, and it gets me on my way. Normally, I'm flying over to Frankfurt from O'Hare and connecting to someplace in Europe, often in the Schengen zone, so I don't have to go through passport control. Connecting to India, though, was a different matter. According to my iPhone's health app, which admittedly is not the most accurate, I walked 1.6 miles that Saturday morning between my O'Hare and Delhi flights. I drug my bag down long corridors that were empty except for some black plastic chairs that were sort of fixed in a semi-reclined position, and they were sort of surrounded by black cloth cots. Frankfurt Airport, I think, really missed the chance to strategically locate, you know, some little Bierstubes along the way. I would have stopped at least a couple of times on that trek for some breakfast beers. The India trip was a bit of a last-minute thing for me, which necessitating a scramble for a new Indian visa. This would be my third Indian visa. My first one was a 5-year visa that I lost when my passport was stolen in Brussels. You remember I talked about that many years ago, many podcasts ago. My second visa was only for 6 months. I can't remember why it was so short. Probably the vendor sent me a very limited invitation letter. This time, I just decided to avoid any future scrambles and just apply for the 10-year visa. Because there's an Indian consulate in Chicago, I didn't have to hassle with postage or third-party passport services. The day before, I sent notes to our USHR department and the admin manager in our Hyderabad office asking for the necessary letters of guarantee and invitation, and then did the application online, printed it out, signed it, and then booked an appointment the next morning. Now, I didn't actually go to the consulate. I've always ended up going to some outsourced visa processing company that has handled sort of the front-end administrivia for the Indian consulate, and which ends up, as near as I can tell, the consulate just approving and signing the visas. So each visa, though, has been with a different processor. So for my first visa in 2010, I dropped my forms and passport off at the office, I don't know, say 8:30 in the morning when they opened, and then I received a text at the end of the day saying, you know, come get it, it's ready. Now, in 2014, a different processor gave my wife a very hard time trying to upsell her on expedited handling charges that just weren't needed. Now, this time, Cox and Kings, which is the current visa processor, was really a surprisingly painless experience. I went in Thursday after lunch. There was no wait. The people were pleasant. End of day Thursday, I receive an email and a text telling me that my application had been processed and was heading to the consulate. Friday morning, another email and text saying that my application had arrived at the consulate. Another message at lunch that it was being processed. And a last message at the end of the day on Friday that it was back at Cox and Kings. Monday morning, another message telling me that it had been packaged up. This was immediately followed by yet another message with the UPS tracking number. Tuesday afternoon, my passport landed on my front porch with my 10-year visa pasted in it. I have to tell you, I was incredibly impressed and feeling a bit spoiled comparing this level of customer service to what my non-US friends tell me they have to go through to get their US visa. And hey, if you have any travel questions, a story, comment, a travel tip, the voice of the traveler, send it along. The email address, as always, is comments, COMMENTS, at travelcommons.com. You can always use your smartphone to record and send in an audio comment. You can hit me on a Twitter message like Gary did to M. Peacock, or post your thoughts on the Travel Commons Facebook page, or go old school. Use the website at travelcommons.com. So the first topic on today's Travel Commons podcast is when you think the TSA is bad. I have to tell you, a week of flying around India is always a good sanity check for me. That no matter what crankiness I have about the TSA, airport security in the US is so much easier than in India. When I was talking at the start of the episode about how the delay of our Pune-Delhi flight blew up the rest of our itinerary to get home, the main reason we were immediately starting to work on alternative flights is because we knew how long it would take to work our ways through the different layers of security in Indira Gandhi Airport in Delhi. And it started when we were trying to make our way from the domestic flight arrivals into the international departure area so that we could reticket our flights. We had to pass through the usual itinerary check. I show the guy, the army guy, that the boarding pass for my United flight that we missed, it was all that I had. But since that flight had already left, he wasn't going to let me through. Luckily, one of the group that I was flying with was United Global Services, and two customer service staff had met our whole group as we got off that delayed Air India flight. Even then, it took one of the women a good bit of time to explain the situation to the army guy and convince him to let me through. But for her, I would have been sort of idling around baggage claim on my own at midnight or at 11 o'clock at night, trying to figure out how to get to a ticket counter. Passport control was pretty efficient, but the security scans, not so much. After you unpack all your electronics and push everything through the X-ray machine, you'll walk through the metal detector for your gender. Different scanners for gents and ladies, because there's a full wanding and pat-down on the other side. Indeed, the ladies go into a little curtained booth for their pat-down. Now, that's normally not too much of a hassle, unless the ladies' pat-down line backs up, and then, you know, the backup of those women in line leads to a backup of women's luggage on the X-ray machine, which means they got to shut the X-ray machine down, and my luggage now is, I don't know, within the X-ray machine, which happened that very evening. None of the security people moved any of the bags to clear things. There was just really nothing to do but stand there and wait. Our flight from Pune landed at Delhi at 11 p.m. When looking at flight alternatives, I had seen an Air Canada flight leaving at 12:10 a.m., but I just passed right by it because I knew there was no way we'd make that flight. The security checks in Frankfurt, while much more efficient, were still more than what you'd get in the U.S. So on the way over to India, after passing everything through the X-ray machine, I was intercepted after collecting my bags, directed over to a cubicle where all of my bags were swabbed and checked for explosives residue. Now, all that was done with this sort of German sense of politeness, but again, I was glad I wasn't in a rush. On my connection back home, it was a different security line with a body scanner instead of the walk-through metal detector. No big deal, but it was just different enough to be awkward. Instead of the TSA's hands up, don't shoot pose, it was an arms down, elbows out pose, kind of like you're holding luggage. The guy working the scanner was visibly annoyed that he had to instruct me on that pose at least a couple of times, getting me to hold my elbows and my arms out further away from my body. But then, you know, there was no luggage swiping on the other side, so there you go. Picking up my bags, though, I ended up having to maneuver around three officers that were cradling automatic rifles. They were just standing there chatting, but they were watching. Now, that's no big deal now, but I remember when I first started traveling through Europe, London Heathrow and Frankfurt in the mid to late 80s, and being taken aback by the army guys walking around with unslung M16s and the like. That, you know, this was pre-TSA time in the U.S., and you just didn't see that sort of stuff. Heck, I mean, it would be out of place to see anything more than a rent-a-cop in a airport terminal. And remember, that was when you could still turn up 30 minutes before departure time and make your flight. Back then, seeing all those weapons in an airport, back in the mid-80s, that difference was eye-opening, at least for me, a 20-something traveler. Of course, none of us knew that it was really a preview of what flying would be like 20 years later. The second topic on today's Travel Commons podcast is expired money. In last December's episode, I talked about how I need to have some cash in my pocket when I travel. I know it's a generational thing. Many of my younger colleagues don't carry any cash, but going cash naked, so to speak, just makes me nervous. And sort of assuaging this anxiety on international travel means that, you know, it fills one of my desk drawers with random bits of currency. You know, that's not a big deal for countries that, you know, my family or I visit often. So, you know, before my daughter flew back to the UK in January for her spring semester at St. Andrews, I rummaged through that desk drawer and found a 20-pound note. I mean, it bought her breakfast when she landed in Edinburgh. But for countries that I visit less often, the money just sort of sits there. I have 350 Mexican pesos, about 18 bucks at today's exchange rate. Honestly, I can't remember the last time I was in Mexico. I also have 400 Chinese yuan, about $60, that is left over from my last trip to Beijing 4 years ago. And at the end of that trip, I thought I'd be back within a year, so I didn't work hard to sort of spend down those notes, but that trip didn't happen, and so there those yuan notes sit. Now, before the India trip, I hit the cash drawer and pulled out 12 euro in notes and coins from our trip to Spain a couple of months ago. That was for the connection through Frankfurt. And then also I pulled out 200 rupee, about $30, that was left over from my 2014 trip to India. I didn't spend any of the euros. I spent most of my time, as I said, either walking that 1.6 miles through the concourses or drinking beer in the Lufthansa lounge. But the rupees came in handy for tipping all the guys at the hotel who insisted on helping me carry my carry-on bag. Here's 100 for you, and you, and you, and you, and oh, yeah, you too. Now, one night in Pune, we were at the JW Marriott at a rooftop bar for hors d'oeuvres and pre-dinner drinks. There's a catered bar on our side of the terrace, and they have the usual Kingfisher beers. But then I saw someone on the other, kind of the public, the non-catered side of the terrace, with a different non-Kingfisher beer. It was a Bira 91 Blonde, I guess. I headed over to the main bar to get one. Now, this was the main bar, not the catered one, so I was going to have to pay for that Bira 91, but that wasn't a problem. I had rupees in my pocket. Yeah, they would have taken an Amex card, but, you know, I had a 1,000 rupee and a 500 rupee note. I needed kind of to break them for more luggage tips. So I laid the 1,000 rupee note down on the bar next to my check, and I just sort of wandered over to the edge of the rooftop to look out over the city. A couple minutes later, a guy from the bar comes over, taps me on the shoulder, gives me my 1,000 rupee note back. It was no good. And then I remembered. Back in November 2016, the Indian government had made a snap announcement that ended up replacing and invalidating the 500 and 1,000 rupee notes, the ones in my pocket, and they did it to fight counterfeiting. So, boom, 20 bucks of my rupees had expired while sitting in my desk drawer. Lots of apologizing back and forth, and I ended up pulling out my Amex card after all. Now, when I got home, I did a bit of a deeper dive through my cash drawer. Luckily, I didn't have any old 10-pound notes from the UK, the ones with Charles Darwin on them. He expired a couple of months ago, back in March, replaced by a new tenner with Jane Austen. I did find a 1,000 lira note, an Italian lira note with Maria Montessori on the face, which, I don't know, must have been left over from maybe our 10th anniversary trip to Tuscany, because lira notes were replaced with euro notes, you know, what, 15, 16 years ago in 2002. My 1,000 lira note was worth, I don't know, maybe about half a euro when it expired, so not a big loss. But today, when I searched on eBay, I saw it selling for like $2 to $3. Hey, you know, that's a 300-400% return. So, I don't know. Maybe I'll just stuff these rupee notes back into my drawer and check back at, I don't know, maybe about 2035 and make that killing. Okay, that's it. That's the end of Travel Commons Podcast number 141. I hope you all enjoyed the show. Hope you decide to stay subscribed. Check out the show notes for music links. You can find us on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, TuneIn. You can ask Alexa. Remember last time I said you could ask Alexa to play, hey Alexa, play Travel Commons. If you have a story, thought, comment, gripe, the voice of the traveler, send them along. Text your audio file comments, COMMENTS at travelcommons.com. To M. Peacock on Twitter, write them on the Travel Commons Facebook page, or post them on our website at travelcommons.com. Thanks to everyone who has taken the time to send in emails, tweets, and post comments on the website. And speaking of the website, some of you have noticed and sent me notes that I've been having some performance problems lately. Honestly, this had to do with my attempt to switch Travel Commons from regular HTTP to encrypted HTTPS. Again, bowing to Google's, you know, search engine optimization gods, they basically have said anybody who's not HTTPS, try saying that three times fast, anybody who's not using SSL will get downgraded in the search rankings. So, you know, I read a couple of blog posts, said, oh, okay, well, this is how you do it with WordPress, which is how I do the the website. And it just killed it. I don't know what I did wrong. And so then in trying to reverse it, it killed it squared. So, I sort of apologize. I just have not had time between, going to India and now and trying to get this episode out. I haven't had time to, really dig in and fix it. I'll just probably rip the whole damn thing down and then rebuild it. I think that'll be easier than trying to troubleshoot it. But again, I haven't gone anywhere. I just, I've got technical difficulties. So anyhow, thanks for being patient with that, anybody who given it a shot. So I guess I could say, if you want to post a comment, maybe skip the website and just put it on the Facebook page or put it on Twitter. Who knows? Anyhow, all that being said, thanks again for listening. Thanks for subscribing. Thanks for telling your friends to subscribe. And until we talk next month, take care. Thanks for stopping by the Travel Commons. Bye now.